With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this, another brand new episode of Glamour. Hey, it's okay. I'm Jo Elvin. I'm the editor-in-chief of Glamour. And today we have a fantastic amount of varied conversation topics. You know what it's like here. You never know what you're going to get. We're going to talk about muting your best friends on social media. Is it okay to actually pretend you've won an award, stand in front of the mirror and make an Oscar speech? I told you it was varied. And then we're going to get down and deep about womanhood. Is there a right and a wrong way to be a woman? Stay tuned. Glamour Features meetings are exactly like this, aren't they, Helen Whittaker?
Hello. Oh yeah, definitely.
Yes. Hello, I'm Jo Elvin. This is Hey It's Okay, although today I'm going to rename it Hey Fever It's Not Okay. So if I sound weird, that's why. And as you know, I have here entertainment director Helen Whittaker.
Hello.
And actress extraordinaire and a little bit of a singer and musician, I believe. I know her and love her from Fresh Meat. Everybody knows her from Call the Midwife, and she's in a play at the moment. It's Miss Charlotte Ritchie.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. Stand a little bit closer, Charlotte.
Oh, closer.
Make love to that
microphone.
Can I pull
this down a bit?
Yeah.
There we go.
And I just want to apologise now for the state of the pod cover, which is in a particularly worse state than usual, because it's Glamour Women of the Year Awards time as we record this, and we are drowning in celebrity goodie bags.
It is hard to not look at all of those.
I will have to frisk you on the way out.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, I hate freebies. I really hate them.
Look, I can get you. I'll find you a shampoo, a stray
cool.
shampoo.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah.
You're going to the Lido later, aren't you? So you might need that.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually always my mum and my sister-in-law that really benefit from any goodie bags that I have. I'm just saying I'm very philanthropic. I'm very charitable. So if you did give me any.
I love the placement of that philanthropic word.
Oh, yeah, that really was.
Do you know? Yeah. So why did you bring that up,
incredible,
Charlotte? Tell me.
The PR machine is working inside my head.
Because you're in a play at the moment called The...
The Philanthropist.
Yeah. Magic. Yeah.
I wonder if that's more just a sort of indication of how much of the time I'm thinking about that play, as opposed to the fact that I'm a sophisticated promoter of the work that I do.
Well, let's do some sophisticated promoting. It's a dark comedy, am I right?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank God for that, because I haven't had a chance to see it.
Yeah.
But you're in it, and I love you from Fresh Meat. Simon Bird's in it. I've seen the plot. It's sort of like a dystopian future.
It's probably good that you haven't seen it, because then that means that I have to tell you what it is and in a succinct and appealing way, which it's basically a play set in early 1970s, so 1970-ish, and it was written in the late 60s, and it's set in a kind of slightly alternative future, but not in a kind of futuristic science fiction way.
Sort of set now, when everything's fine and dandy in the world.
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, it's basically, it doesn't directly reference any political situation, but it is rooted in a collegiate college. So basically somewhere like Oxford or Cambridge, 24 hours in one student's room, a student called Philip, who's played by Simon Bird. And it's the events that unfold at a dinner party the night before and then the day after. And you have a very controversial character called Braham, who's played by Matt Berry, who was in Toast of London.
Oh, I love Matt Berry.
He's amazing. Yeah. And he kind of represents the very those people who thrive on being controversial. And he sort of messes up the dinner party and postulates about different political issues in a way that is really controversial. And sets everybody,
don't you just hate those
up.
People?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably funny in the context of that play, but it's so exhausting when you know that somebody is just saying horrible things to wind everybody up, like Katie Hopkins, I guess.
Right. So, he's, in my opinion, a kind of male Katie Hopkins.
Yeah.
He says, if I wasn't controversial, I wouldn't be rich. And he's basically sort of saying that...
That's
if
a little
I don't,
bit on the nose. How prophetic of whoever wrote this in the 60s.
Unfortunately, very prophetic. Yeah, there's a lot of references to terror attacks and things outside their bubble that are catastrophic. But the kind of theme of this play is that they exist in a bubble. These things pass them by, and they just get on, and they care more about their own personal relationships than they do about the outside world and politics. So it's really interesting. Look at that.
Now, I'm slightly depressed by how au courant those themes are when something written so long ago. Yeah. So how am I supposed to feel when I leave the play?
Well, it's been a difficult one because we basically ended up... Simon Callow came and gave a speech to the audience because it felt necessary to acknowledge the fact that when we're making references to these kind of events happening in a fictitious play with it takes a very wry kind of very dark look at the world, and we wanted to make sure the audience felt comfortable to laugh in the context of everything that's happening at the moment. So it is a kind of treads a very uncomfortable line, but it's a strange reflection on the fact that is all happening as a weird coincidence. We're doing this play, but the play is not really about that. It just happens to reference that, and it ends up being much more about personal truths and people's own feelings about the world and their own relationships. So it only sort of slightly and indirectly references those things.
And who do you play? What's your role?
So I play Celia, and I'm engaged to Philip, who's Simon Bird's character, and I'm a sort of confident, verbose, witty woman who doesn't really know. I mean, I say that very confidently. I'm attempting to portray this woman. And she basically ends up kind of having to confront a lot about herself during the play. And she's very cynical, and Philip is very honest and truthful. And it's about how they... Sorry, I clinked the microphone.
It's real life.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Also, I'm so glad that on the microphone you can't tell how much I'm sweating.
I know, I'm sorry.
It's such a series.
I think it's even thinking of all the plastic in here is making me even sweatier.
No. Like, just thinking it's such a... Yeah, it's a strange thing to talk about this play, actually, at the moment. But
you're enjoying it.
I am. And there's so much in it. There's so much of it's so funny. This is the strange thing that it is predominantly, it's really funny, and there's so much in it that's, as I say, about personal relationships, and it's lighthearted in so many parts of it. So it's such a strange, I've never come across a play that is so full of different things. I just can't really get my head around it. Audiences kind of come, and some of them are baffled, some of them really love it, and it's kind of a strange mix of all different themes. I find it really hard to explain.
I mean, I'm really excited to see it. You're in it, Simon Bird's in it, Matt Berry, three of my favourite current comedy stars.
Yeah.
So I've already decided to love it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, where can we see it? How long is it on for?
So it's on at the Trafalgar Studios, which is just by Trafalgar Square, and it's on till the 22nd of July. And
everybody,
it's brilliant. I love it. I think it's an amazing play. It was written by Christopher Hampton, who was 21 at the time, and it's an amazing feat. And 50 years later, the fact that it has so many references to things that are happening now is quite uncanny and a bit strange, but it's brilliant. Yeah, I really like it.
And you're also doing Call the Midwife. I know that everybody will be excited to hear that. What can you tell us?
I can't tell you a single thing.
Man. Get out of my
tell
cupboard.
Us when it's when there's going to be.
Yeah, so it's going to be on Christmas Day, as is our as has been reserved for the last few years. So Christmas Day in the evening.
Oh, I'm going to be. I'm going to have had enough wine to bawl my eyes out. I can just tell already.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it definitely does make you weep every single time.
Is there any times of week where you just can't? You think, how am I going to get through this storyline?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's been a lot of them. The thing is, what's strange about filming a program like that when it's very serious a lot of the time is that it's quite easy to kind of be irreverent when you're filming, because you have to somehow lift yourself out of these very serious scenes. So I end up probably laughing more filming Call the Midwife than I do any of the other comedies I've ever done, because comedy ends up being quite serious. You just want to get it right. But when something's dramatic and you're doing a scene that's so sad and so unfortunate, then you do want to kind of offset it with a joke. When someone says cut, something usually happens. So, yeah, it's fun.
Oh, I was looking at, I thought you were going to ask a question about what we call the midwives.
No, I was just thinking actually about what Charlotte said to us earlier, when, because obviously she was in Fresh Meat, and we shot her for Glamour.
Yes.
Whilst it was on with the rest of the cast. Yes. And they got drunk on the shoot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd like to say you guys got us drunk. And it really helped with your photographs.
It was like, that's our secret weapon.
It was a party setup.
No, listen, we had all been working since, I think, about 5 a.m. And it was probably about 7 p.m. And we all just had one glass of champagne and were drunk.
Sure, you did.
It says more about us than anything else, yeah.
It's really hard to get a vibe going on shoots, so I just do try to get people drunk.
Yeah,
that's
great.
My secret.
Yeah,
yeah.
It does work.
I'm really glad your publicist is here to see this.
Yeah, I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying, for some people, it does work.
Right. So, Charlotte Ritchie. What we tend to do is trap people, celebrities, in the pod cupboard, make them speak to us, and make them solve all our features. Generated dilemmas and debates. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you up to the challenge?
Yeah, I can't promise I'll solve them, but
we have to, otherwise you never get out of here again.
I'll solve them.
That's it. That's the law.
Yeah. No, it's done.
Pod cupboard
rules. You
better
watch out, because I'm going to solve these.
Yeah. Right. I want to know, is it okay, Charlotte Ritchie, Helen Whittaker, to mute people on social media who are in real life your actual good friends and people that you like?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, there's that one. That was done. Next. No. Oh, it's true, though, isn't it?
It is, unfortunately, true. I actually got locked out of Facebook. Can I say Facebook?
Yeah.
I didn't know if you're allowed to say, like,
I think, yeah.
Names. Of course you are.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what Facebook is. So I got locked out. Someone changed my password. I don't know how. And then I just couldn't get in. So all of a sudden, about a year and a half ago, I was just off Facebook. And I'd been on for about 8 years. And I thought I would really miss it. And then I suddenly was just so... It was so nice. I basically, my biggest problem with seeing people that I love and know speaking on Facebook is that it feels like a different version of them that I don't really know in real life.
Quite often, that's, yes.
Yeah,
It's not really, and also everyone's so specific about certain things that they post about that it's not their whole character. So you might end up being put off someone that you actually really like.
That's what I think. Let's
be honest, it's politics that really brings it out, doesn't it? It's like there's a reason that there's that rule about not discussing politics at dinner parties, and Facebook is the new dinner party arena where, please, I think that, I don't know, I'll allow myself the odd meme of, is it meme or meme? Someone tell me for once and for all.
I think it's meme.
It's meme. I always say meme. God, man, I'm learning something every day. Growing and learning. I'm quite happy with the odd meme of Melania Trump batting away Donald's hand.
That makes me too depressed for words.
I think that's some good megalols. I'm into that. But there are people who I love, who I'm sure who I don't have the same political views as. I don't want to have that argument on Facebook.
Where would you have it? Do you think you'd have it in person?
I'd have a discussion, because I think in real life, you know, I might learn something from that person. I think that, good food, bit of wine, actual facial expressions and body language, and, you know, being face to face and reminded of how much you like about someone in so many other arenas helps you to, I think, have usually a reasoned debate. But I'm even, you know, I'm not loving all the, I find it quite aggressive, the people even putting up, whether it's they're voting Conservative or Labour or Lib Dem, you know, even putting up the like little political icons as their avatars and things like that. I just feel like this is where I come when I just want to see my friends and have a laugh.
It's a bit of the equivalent of being cornered by some bloke in the pub and them droning on at you.
Yeah.
I feel like they're just telling you what you should think, which that really gets my hackles up for a start.
There is,
and secondly, it's just them. I don't know. It's just I don't need you to keep telling me what you're going to do. Just go and do it. I'm happy you're going to use your vote.
Yeah,
but I don't need to hear about it all the time.
I think also the problem with that is I'm really mixed with that, because I think it is important to express how you feel about things, and it's hard to know where to do that anymore. And actually, you've been given a place like Facebook to tell somebody how you feel, because when you go to vote, you just get one vote, and then you don't, it possibly might not go your way, and then you feel complete, so people feel like they need to express it. But the problem is that if you have it on somewhere like Facebook alongside pictures of cats, it makes people's political views as important as pictures of cats, which means that, like, we do discredit other people's views, because you scroll down and, like, a Labrador's doing something funny, and then someone puts, like, a really important piece about Theresa May, and then you've got a goldfish blowing a bubble. You can tell how long it's been since I've been on Facebook. But it all becomes the same thing, so we're all really apathetic to it as well.
How do you feel then about, I mean, you know, if somebody, it's when I get into these sort of like black holes where people who don't know each other and only know each other through me are having raging arguments on my timeline. I actually can't stand it, and I've, you know, find myself sort of emailing one of them going, I'm sorry, I don't really know that person that well. Yeah, it's like, you know, I met them at a party once and it was polite to add them as a friend.
Yeah,
and I just feel, I mean, maybe I'm just wet and a wuss. I don't want to have those raging arguments on my page.
It doesn't really feel also that you could. What's a bit of annoying about those kind of things, and I get sucked into Twitter every single morning. It usually starts with Piers Morgan's Twitter feed, and then it like spirals down into just, you know, all sorts of people.
You follow him.
I know. I don't. I just go on it. It's a compulsion. It's like a sort of, I don't know why, and I find myself in the morning like paralyzed for about half an hour just going, okay, I'm reading this. But you get sucked into these arguments, and I then think, this isn't real. You just, no one's really responding, no one's listening to each other, and it's just a sort of weird release of energy. People feel like if they say something aggressive, then they can feel better about where they're at, and nothing changes.
And I think when it comes to social media platforms, I'm just so suspicious now of what's real and what's fake. So it's all very well sticking up your news item about something evil some politician did, but I don't trust those mediums to be delivering genuine news in the same way that I do a newspaper. And so I just feel like everybody's getting hysterical about things that might not even be true or half true.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and I mute.
One other thing I would say though about generally muting is that since I'm off Facebook, this sounds very preachy, but I don't really know what people are up to. So when I see them, I don't have that weird feeling of already knowing that they've been on holiday to da-da-da, and I have to ask them, which is great. And I have to ring some friends to ask them what they're up to rather than just know and then not having to just liking a photo but not actually calling them. This is my advert for getting off it.
I think that, but is there somebody on Facebook who's pretending to be you? What's the deal?
I don't know. I Google myself enough to know that there isn't.
Right. I was just wondering, I would feel like that would feel like being locked out of my house, just not being able to access my Facebook page.
No, that page. I wrote to them, said, can you shut it down? They said, yeah, we'll lock it. Because they don't know it's me, but they don't know it's them. So they just...
I'm all for this social experiment of phoning people up and finding out what they do rather than just looking at it online.
It's really, I mean, I'm not saying I do that either.
That's radical.
No, when your phone rings, no one, surely everyone screens now.
Yeah, you just don't. A phone call for me is the final frontier. That's how you get through to me. So text, I'm really bad at replying.
And if you someone picks up the phone, they must really like you. Know
that's
it's you.
That's interesting.
Or it's serious.
There's a lot of people you work with now are going to be really, really offended. She never picks up my calls. Someone else.
Oh no, it's
she
the always it's the unnamed numbers.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, she's going red. I don't
nice
believe her.
Nice save. Yeah.
Hello, listeners. Podcast editor Kat here, and I'm delighted to say we're taking Hey It's OK to the London Podcast Festival. That's right, join Joe, James and a celebrity guest for a special live episode on Saturday, September 16th. You can get your tickets now at kingsplace.co.uk and clicking on the event calendar. See you there.
You thought that was serious, talking about politics and Facebook.
Yeah.
Is it OK, Charlotte Ritchie, to write an acceptance speech in your head for, say, maybe winning an imaginary award, or have your Desert Island Discs selection ready just in case, or pretend you're on a chat show and telling your life story? Are you up for a bit of secret audience?
Yeah.
Sort of, I don't know, you know what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm saying.
I totally, and yes, it is, of course, 100% okay.
I don't think I've ever done a speech.
I've never done a speech. I've had imaginary arguments with people in my head where I'm zinger after zinger and taking them
down.
Of course.
But how different is real life to that?
I've had imaginary this is your life, like sitting on the chair and everybody I've ever known. And so, you know, like there's the people you haven't seen for years and you're crying with happiness. And then there's also, I've always hated you and I've always wanted to say to you. So
they do that on This Is Your Life.
I don't know. But
I don't think they do the revenge. Yeah.
It would be the highest rating This Is Your Life ever.
It really would
be. Honest.
That's the format they need to bring back where you, This Is Your Life in enemy version, and then all your enemies come back and tell
this
you
is your shady life.
God, no thank you. I think it's of course. I mean, I think this, so sometimes if I've got to go along to an award ceremony and I've watched people do speeches, I feel like they must have, as soon as they found out, just had a little sketch of what they might write, because
I think
first and foremost, you want to be prepared.
I think
you?
If you've nominated, you'd be really stupid not to do that.
Okay, all right, that's a good point.
What I'm
but
talking
you mean just
about
like day
is
day to day.
Yeah,
yeah.
Hairbrush held like an Oscar in the mirror.
Yeah.
Fake crying.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
I've actually not done that physically, but in my head, walking down the street, I think I've filed through different people's speeches and wondered what's the optimum speech.
Yeah.
Not in anticipation of winning an award, of course.
Don't be modest. I want to win awards for Glamour magazine. I want us to win Magazine of the Year. Of course you want to one day win an Actress of the Year. Of course you do.
If there was a general award of like worldwide Actress of the Year, I would win that one.
Best one ever. Yeah.
But I think it's just because you can analyse, I don't know whether you're supposed to cry a bit. I don't know who you'd thank. I'd get very flustered about naming people. That's my worry. Well, obviously, you've got mum and dad, family, friends. But then do you want specific friends? Do I thank my first drama teacher? And then that makes me so stressed that I end up forgetting about the speech and I go and do something else.
This is like my if I won the lottery thing, where I literally think about who I would and wouldn't share money with and how much I'd tell them I'd won.
Yeah.
So I think my husband and I have that conversation where you'd need to win at least 5 million before you even told your family. Because if it was like a million and you had to give them tons of money, then there would be none left. Yeah. I've literally thought about that.
I think it would be a weird moral dilemma, actually. It would probably be too stressful, because how could you not just give it away? You'd enjoy your yacht, but not as much as if someone had forced you to have a yacht. If you'd chosen to just have it, then you'd always feel a bit guilty that you didn't do something. Like, my sister would be there waving from the shore, being like, I'll kill you when you get back for not giving me that money.
What would your desert island discs be, Charlotte?
Oh, thank you for asking. I actually don't, they're quite a long one, but they would definitely involve, I've got, my brother's a musician. I would choose one of his songs called Song to Sundays, which I love. It's about hangovers. Lovely. It's really beautiful. Probably choose a Paul Simon song. But then it gets a bit murky. I've probably got about 15 choices and I'm not going to waste everybody's time by going through them. But I think I'd love to be able to go on and do my desert island.
See, I'm glad one you day. Said you've prepared that as well, though, because I always feel bad when I'm interviewing famous people and I sort of throw out there, oh, what's your favourite TV show, films, music, books? And I always sit there and think, I don't know what I'd say if someone put me on the spot like this. Yeah. Because what book defines me as a person? Yeah. What song doesn't make me sound like
Harry
too
Potter
and
three,
cool? Or exactly. But the fact that you've thought about it, I'm going to carry on asking people that now without any guilt at all.
But why is there? I don't think there should be really any shame, particularly in your profession. Maybe I'm never going to win an Oscar, so that would be a bit weird if I'm spending a lot of time practicing that speech. But I think that it's just a sign of aspiration.
Yeah, it's ambitious.
It's a goal.
Sure.
Yeah.
I do think it's probably a good idea, really just generally organisationally, just in case. But I think it's more fun if you're not in that profession, because it's nice. Oh, I'm going to get really... I've never thought about this, but it might be nice to think about what you would win if you were... This is ridiculous, like a school exercise. What would you win if you weren't an actor, but you have a good life? But actually, if you... who you would thank for the things that you have and all that stuff is quite a nice...
True.
Thing to think about. I've never really thought about it like that, because basically most people are where they are because of other people and things that they've got in their life and obviously working hard. But I just think that's quite a nice exercise anyway. So if anyone's listening to the podcast, I hadn't actually thought about that
when we started this conversation, but I think that's actually a really good idea.
I think it's because your brain immediately went to how you would tell people who've wronged you. and how you would lord it over them if you won a prize.
No, that's different to This Is Your Life. Yeah. I have won prizes and had to give speeches and I didn't use it to get up and go,
there is definitely an argument to be had for when you finally get that platform, just really giving it to all the people that gave you a bad time.
No, I wouldn't do that. But I think This Is Your Life is really funny, because then you just think about everybody in your life.
Yeah.
I mean, the things you've overcome. Mm. Yeah.
But I mean, I genuinely haven't I know it's like a thing, but I don't think people really do it, as in actually get their hairbrush and pretend it's an Oscar. But maybe they do, and bloody good for them.
I'm sure that some actors and actresses have said that they've done that, because I think it's just that it's not that, oh, I want that award. Mm. It's that represents so much about achievement, doesn't it? That's the thing.
I guess so. Yeah. I don't know. I find those things a bit odd, actually, awards and things.
Yeah.
Because I can say this very comfortably from the place of never having won one. But I feel like generally awards, they're really great, and they're good for kind of boosting the industry and having a lovely time and advertising the films that people are in. And also they're a testament to people's talent, that's for sure. But also all the people that don't win are still incredible, or like, it's kind of a strange thing to award someone. It's quite a subjective thing, isn't it?
Glamour is up for some awards later this month, and I'm already practicing what was coined in Friends as my gracious loser face. I've got that one down.
Oh, that's the thing. Yeah. I remember seeing once Sarah Silverman lost an award. She didn't win, and the camera went to all the people who were runners up, and she had really subtly just put a little moustache on her face and was really seriously clapping. I thought that was pretty good. Might get some glasses or something.
I might do that. Mm.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right, I might start talking and never stop on this one.
Okay.
Is it okay to hate health food and hate the health food craze? I'm saying yes. Bugger off. Take your chia seeds and please leave.
I think pick them all up from the floor, every single one.
Yeah,
I think it is okay to. I'm going to split it in half. I think it's okay to hate the health food craze, but it's okay to like health food. That's annoying, isn't it?
I suppose I'm just feeling a bit grumpy about how complicated the whole thing has become. Yeah. And you know, when you sit down in a cafe and you realise accidentally that it's you know, all the chocolate is actually dates, and I'm really done. It doesn't have to be this complicated or this expensive. Let's talk about that as well.
That's the big thing. This is the slight, I mean, I don't know enough about it, and I'm gonna admit my ignorance now, because there will be people that go, no, actually you can eat really healthily cheaply. But when I go to buy chia seeds or whatever powder, I look and it's like £5 for a bag, and I'm thinking, how can everybody just buy nice healthy food?
And putting that aside for a minute, most of it's really yucky. Why isn't anybody saying it's just horrible?
I guess it depends on, I think the thing that I find difficult is not so much, I'm sure if I cracked it, if I was like, oh, I can find healthy and cheap and delicious food, then I'd be fine and it'd be awesome.
But is that just not fruit and veg? I feel like it's gone into...
This is what I'm saying, Helen Whittaker.
It's turned into like a cult where if you don't have the chia seeds and the quinoa, then you're not a healthy
person.
And you haven't
been spending your Sunday making sweet potato smash or something to freeze. And what the hell?
I think it's a weird... Yeah, it's stressful. But the problem for me with it, more than anything else, is like, firstly, the massive industry that's boomed making money from it, because it feels sometimes like a little bit... You're taking it basically... I find it quite anxiety inducing, which is absurd because it's not necessarily an important thing, but maybe other people feel this way. But when you look at a meal or you look at a menu and you start having the thoughts that someone said, don't eat sugar, don't eat dairy, don't eat meat, then I'm like, what can I eat? And then I know so many people who it's really had a negative effect on their life, and it's become an obsession because it's really hard to get your head around what you're supposed to be eating.
Well, as a mother, I'm not happy with, you know, my 11-year-old daughter coming home from school she's a fussy eater anyway, and then she won't eat pasta because some friend of hers mum told her that pasta's really bad, and you know, I'm done with it.
It's the good and bad foods thing when really can't we just put some peas on the plate and that helps and we all feel a bit better because we've had some veg,
you know. Even any food in the wrong quantities, any food you're obsessive about is bad for you. It doesn't matter what it is. And we've got a feature coming out. There's an Instagram account that I urge you to have a look at called Shannon's Kitchen Australia. And she's, you know, maybe I like her because she's a blunt-talking Aussie like myself. But she's also a registered nurse, so she knows a lot about what she's talking about in terms of nutrition. And she's a little bit like, can you just eat some vegetables and a bit of meat and shut up? And that's what I love about her.
It just makes me stress thinking about it, which it shouldn't, because it's food. It's literally what you have to have to survive. So the fact that it's become this obsessive thing is really sort of worrying. My friend, I'm going to do a little shout out too, actually. My friend Daniela Isaacs and my friend Rosie Bannum, they're making a show going up to Edinburgh that's called Hear Me Roar, which is about Daniela's experiences of working in the health food industry and how it had effects on her body and how her relationship with food. I think it's quite an interesting thing.
Fascinating. And exactly a huge part of my problem with the whole thing.
That's the one. I think it's just regulating people's I don't know. I'm not an expert about it, obviously, clearly.
So what about you? You've got the most shiny hair I've ever seen. You've got the clearest skin I've ever seen, the brightest eyes. You're obviously doing something right. What's your philosophy for...
Or
is it just goddamn youth, Charlotte Ritchie?
No. Well, I spend a fair amount of time getting ready. I try not to. This is another thing I find like a very difficult balance between should I just get out and go out and not put any makeup on or worry about washing my hair and just be free? But then also I just sort of stop at the door and then I go back and I straighten my hair and I put products in it and I always wear makeup. And it's quite difficult to kind of get the balance about. But basically what I should do is just take your compliments and say thank you very much.
Well, option one. But, you know, you came in, you were eating some yummy looking porridge. But do you worry about, does nutrition sort of like guide everything that you do?
It doesn't guide everything, but I'm really aware of it now. Yeah. Like in a way that it doesn't necessarily manifest itself in any kind of behaviour because I end up just freaking out about it so much. But I'm attempting to be vegetarian for various kind of environmental
I know. Well, I was just going to go and suggest we go and have a cleansing burger. But I'm with you on the environmental thing.
There's so much to digest. Oh, kill me. There's so much to take in. I think a big part of everything is just being conscious of your decisions and why you're making them.
Yeah.
I feel like if you make an informed decision, then at least that's something. If I buy something to eat, I at least know why I'm buying it, rather than kind of just buying something because it was advertised to me and I just didn't really think about it and I bought it. And I guess thinking about the repercussions of things, that seems to be the kind of thought of the day for the world now, is just thinking a little bit more about your impression on the world and your repercussions of what your actions are, rather than just being a blind consumer who just buys stuff without thinking about where it might. I guess that's I guess that's it. That's me. Like a little pithy write-off, as if that solves everybody's problem. I guess that's just me.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I completely agree with trying to minimize your carbon footprint and all of those things, but I guess I just, it's a plea for me to, for everybody to stop thinking that bread is the enemy, or you know what I mean, and that kind of thinking. Do you know what I mean, Helen?
Definitely. I just think now it seems like it's such a, I don't know, there's the food of the moment, that's the thing that you have to eat, whether that is the chia seeds or the quinoa or whatever it is. And actually, you know, the old-fashioned stuff still fine, but it's not the enemy against you. You can still have a potato.
Yeah
shepherd's pie and bread,
god yes, let's do it. Maybe a vegan one.
Yeah, sure.
I know a good recipe. I'll give it to you.
Oh, great. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for being here, Charlotte Ritchie,
thank
today.
You for having me.
Go and see Charlotte's play, The Philanthropist, on at Trafalgar Theatre until the 22nd of July. I will be there. I cannot wait.
Yeah, please come.
And thank you, Helen Whitaker.
Thank you.
Can you just get back to work now, please?
I know, sorry. Back to my desk.
And Kat Brown, thank you very much for producing, as ever. And yes, this has been Glamour Hey It's Okay, and we will see you next Tuesday.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.